Yeah, I should have covered that.
Yeah,
the way it works is this. Did you get that? He wants to know if you can receive communion in an Orthodox church. The answer is this. Because they do have valid sacraments, you can receive communion in an Orthodox church, but there are two issues. According to the Catholic Church, we would say, yes, you can receive communion in an Orthodox church, like if and only if you are unable to get to a Catholic church. The other problem is that they probably wouldn't let you. If you told them you were Catholic, they would probably say no. Now, if you didn't tell them, if you just showed up and walked up the aisle, they would just give it to anyone, as we do. I mean, and again, we wouldn't have a problem with that from the Catholic perspective. They might. But generally, I mean, they generally recognize our sacraments and we recognize theirs. And so in an emergency, you can do those kinds of things. Receive the other sacraments. Yeah, Bill.
Three quick questions. I'll ask you a question. Number one, did Vatican II have any effect on any of the other rites other than the Roman rite? And two, why do they cost themselves what we would consider backwards?
Oh, yeah.
And thirdly, so I've seen you celebrate Mass outside in the cold in the cemetery. In the extraordinary form. If tomorrow you wake up and have a hankering to celebrate Mass in the Byzantine rite, are you allowed to do that?
Yeah, and I have. Let me answer those in the right order. So, the first question was, did Vatican II affect the Eastern churches? The answer is yes and no. Insofar as it was applying to the universal church, then yes. Insofar as it was talking about the Roman Rite, then no. Because, for instance, the first document that came out of Vatican II, the first and arguably biggest and most controversial document that came out of Vatican II was Sacrosanctum Concilium, which was on the sacred liturgy. And that was the one that called for all of the reforms of the liturgy. Now, that document specifically only applied to the Roman Rite. And so when that document came out, the Eastern Rites were like, doesn't apply to us, you know. So that's why they didn't have a big shift. They have their own laws and their own bishops and their own ways of governing the liturgy. And so, interestingly enough, many of the Eastern Rites, not all of them, but many of them actually started using the vernacular before we did. Some of the Byzantine churches, some of the Byzantine Rite churches started using English in this country when we were still using Latin. So that's the first question. Second question, they cross themselves backwards. I should have mentioned that as one of the differences, but when you go to an Eastern Rite church, there's a specific way they cross themselves, and that's something else I've kind of picked up from them and the way they bless. But they do this when they cross themselves. These three fingers are together, the thumb and the index and the middle finger are together, and that's supposed to represent the unity of the three persons in the Blessed Trinity. And then these two fingers are down, representing the two natures of Christ, Christ coming down to us, the human and the divine nature. So they cross themselves doing this. In the West, we don't really have, we just, you know, you see some people do one finger, you see some people do this. And they, that's another thing. But so they follow the movement of the priest. So in both East and West, the priest goes the same direction. So in both East and West, the priest goes left to right. And so they are mirroring what the priest does. They're watching the priest. So when the priest's hand goes this way, so if I bless you like this and you follow my hand, you're going to hit your right shoulder first and then your left shoulder if you follow my hand. So in the East, they follow the priest's hand. In the West, we do it as if we were doing it the same direction as the priest. The other way, in the East, the way the priest blesses is like this. And there are four Greek letters here. Going from front to back, there's the iota, which is the I, which is the first letter of the word Jesus, and then this is the second finger is making a C, which is for Christ, for the second letter of Jesus, the I, C, for Jesus, and then this is the Chi, which is a CH, and then this is another C, which is for Christ, so it's Jesus Christ, so the East will usually bless like this, and you'll see their bishops. It's really cool. Their bishops do both hands and bless like this. And what's really messy too, Bob, if Bob were a sacristan in an Eastern church, he would probably have killed himself by now. Because in the East, when the bishop goes to bless, he receives these candelabras. One has three candles on it. One has two, the three persons of the Trinity, the two natures of Christ, and they're lit, and they're huge candles, and they're lit. And when it comes time for the bishop to bless at the end, the servers come over and they give him these candles. And with them being lit, he goes, boom, 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 turns around, boom, 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 goes this way, boom, boom. I mean, there's wax everywhere, you know. Poor sacristan afterwards. You know? So they bless differently. And then your last question, the Byzantine Rite. As a Roman priest, as a priest, period, I'm allowed to concelebrate any liturgy. I can't be the principal celebrant of a rite that's not my own. So I can only be the principal celebrant of the Roman rite, but I can concelebrate any other liturgy. Now, if there was a need, and if I was willing to learn it, and the bishops agreed, the Roman bishop agreed, and the Byzantine bishop agreed, you know, I could get what's called bi-ritual faculties, and then I could celebrate both. Like, so we had a priest at the seminary who was a priest of the Diocese of Arlington, Roman Rite priest of Arlington, but there was a Byzantine mission, like, right nearby, and they needed a priest, and he always liked the Eastern Rites, and so he was willing to learn it, and the Roman Bishop of Arlington talked to the Byzantine Bishop of Passaic, which is the diocese it fell under, and they got him by ritual faculties, and so he's able to celebrate both. But, like, for instance, I'm going on my annual retreat next week, actually. I leave Tuesday the 31st. I'm going Tuesday to Tuesday, so pray for me. But I usually go to a different monastery each year for my retreat. And this year I'm going to an Eastern Catholic monastery. And so I'm going to be doing the Ukrainian, it's Ukrainian Catholic, so that's the Byzantine Rite. I'm going to be doing that for a whole week. I mean, not just their Mass, but all of their liturgies. And so I can't be the principal celebrant, but I will be the celebrant with the abbot. And the abbot will be he'll be celebrating, and the other priests and me will be concelebrating. But that's all going to be in the Eastern Rites. So that answer your question? Yes.
You said that they recognize our that they have the same sacraments. When is the sacrament of penance given?
They have it.
Because I know once you need to receive the sacrament of penance before the first communion. Where do they tie it in?
Right. They have penance. That's a good question. Do you get that, Karen? She's saying their sacraments of penance, confession. Where do they receive that? Because when the baby is baptized, or for that matter, when an adult is baptized, as soon as either of them are baptized, there is no more sin. And so they're instantly able to be licitly confirmed and validly and licitly receive Holy Communion, because the sin is all gone. But once they reach the age of reason and once they are able to start sinning, then they do go to confession. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned confession because they have a really cool way of doing confession too. When they do confession, they go to the iconostasis, like I told you, that big wall in front of the sanctuary, and there's this big icon of Christ that would just scare the crap out of you in it. It looks like this one where he's vested as a bishop and he's holding his hand out and blessing and he has the book open. And it's called Christ the Teacher. And every Byzantine church has that right next to the main door. What they do is they go up and they basically stare at the icon and they confess to the icon. And the priest is there kind of like listening in. You know what I mean? So it's a clear understanding of their confessing to Christ. Christ is the priest. And yes, this guy who's standing there is a priest too. So it's still the seal of confession. I mean, the priest, again, they're 100% Catholic. So there's still everything we have. They have the seal of confession. The priest can't say anything. But they kneel in front of the icon of Christ. They confess to Christ. The priest is there, listens in, gives the advice. And then the priest actually lifts up his stole and puts it on their head. and says the prayer of absolution over them. So it's kind of cool the way they do confession. So that's one of the things I kind of want to do when I go on a retreat is get a confession to one of them. Because I've never been to confession in the Eastern Rite. That would be kind of cool. And they do, a lot of their sacraments are kind of different. In marriage, for instance, one of the big things that's really different, if you've ever been to an Eastern marriage, again, this is an Orthodox or Catholic, because again, the rites are the same, but when they get married, there's a whole crowning. The priest has, the parish has these two big crowns, and the priest is crowning them because marriage is understood to be a type of triumph over, in a sense, the secularization of the world and a triumph over passions that they're going to be ruled properly now within marriage. And of course, we know that they're not always, even within marriage. But there's also a sense of being king and queen of creation, and there's a whole theology there. But in the rite of marriage, the priest is much more involved. They actually don't even really express vows. They do beforehand, but most of it's the priest, and he takes the crowns and he puts them on their head, and he leads them around the altar like seven times, and it's a pretty cool marriage if you've ever seen.
It's very long, and you stand.
Yeah, you stand. That's another thing too. In most of the Eastern rites, they don't kneel; they stand for most of the time. They stand or they sit for some of the readings. In the Easter season, you stand the entire time. Yeah. But it was pretty cool, wasn't it?
It was really neat. Yeah. Bridesmaids and everything.
Yeah, yeah. So, questions? Oh, yeah.
You talked about the icons. Mm-hmm. Are there standard icons? Because you said books have been written about them. Does everyone who, let's say, does an icon of Christ's baptism, are they all done the same? Or are they done differently?
It's a good question. She's asking if the icons are all done the same. Again, yes and no. There are certain traditions of icon paintings. There's a Russian tradition. There's a Byzantine tradition. There's a few other different traditions. But, yeah, there are a lot of similarities. Like most icons of the baptism look the same. And if there are differences, they're not going to be differences in the essential characteristics. Same with the Nativity, same with the Resurrection. Now, if you're getting some obscure icon of some obscure saint, you know, that no one's ever heard of, they might not have much to go off of. But the same with us. I mean, when you see a statue of, you know, a big bearded guy holding a knife, it's usually St. Bartholomew because he was skinned, you know what I mean? And so that's usually kind of standard. Or same thing with Peter holding an upside-down cross, you know? Oh, that must be Peter. Or that must be, you know, or a woman holding a platter with two eyeballs, that's St. Barbara, you know? Or St. Lucy, excuse me, not Barbara. Different things like that. So there are certain things like that. But again, they have much more details. That you wouldn't pick up on sometimes. So, yes and no. There are similarities. There's some differences as well.
Who was the saint that was beheaded and they picked up his head and went home?
That was Dennis, wasn't it?
I thought about that.
I think Dennis was the one who went to... He was in Paris, and that's why if you've been to Paris, they have Montmartre, Sacré-Cœur de Montmartre. It's the church with the longest perpetual adoration. They have had perpetual adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in that church for over 100 years or something like that. Like the Blessed Sacrament has been exposed for that long. But that church was actually built after, in reparation for the sins of the French Revolution. And it's on this big hill, and the hill was named Montmartre, which means the Mount of Martyrs, because supposedly Dennis was beheaded, but then I think picked up his head, legend says, picked up his head, walked to the top of the hill, blessed the city of Paris, and then died. So, it's probably true.
What about the bouncing?
That was Paul. The Trevi Fountain, yeah, the three fountains in Rome, where his head bounced three times, and now there are three fountains that 33 Springs. Yeah.
Lawrence,
Lawrence was the one who was on a stake being roasted, and this is what I would love to do if I was ever martyred. Like to throw in a little bit of humor right at the end, you know, because supposedly he actually said, "I'm done on this side, turn me over." Anyways, any other questions on the East? Just quick show of hands, I'd be curious to know, how many of you have ever been to an Eastern liturgy, Catholic or Orthodox? Just gotten to see one. Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, there are not a whole lot around here. There is a beautiful, really beautiful Orthodox church up on Route 5. What?
St. Thomas.
Yeah.
It's a Russian Carpatho. It's not a communion with Rome.
Right.
But a shameless plug for my friend who's a priest there. It's really, they used to meet in a house right on Route 5. I guess it's technically called Forest Park. It's kind of in that area between like Madawa and Beantown and 488. They just built their own church with that. It's got the poppy domes and everything.
It's a beautiful, beautiful church.
Awesome looking. It's very small.
So, just a little plug for your obligation. Do still go to a Roman Catholic Mass for your obligation and receive communion, and then go there and watch their liturgy. Don't receive communion there, but watch their liturgy. We can't consolidate with each other.
I've been to a
Catholic and Orthodox can't consolidate. Catholic and Catholic can celebrate. So like a Roman and a Byzantine. But this is kind of the confusing thing with some of the rites is many of them have an Orthodox counterpart. So you have Russian Orthodox, Russian Catholic, Ukrainian Orthodox, Ukrainian Catholic, Greek Orthodox, Greek Catholic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I will say this. This is the other little interesting tidbit, is some of the Eastern churches, actually two of them, don't have an Orthodox counterpart because they never broke away. And it's kind of interesting to look at that historically. There never was a breaking away and a coming back. So they were Eastern and they just never broke away. They were always in union with Rome. And those two Eastern rites, as you can imagine, they're very proud of that tradition. They're very proud of the fact that we were never out of communion with Rome. We were always in communion with Rome and didn't break away and come back. But all the rest of them, there are some that are still away and some that are back. And so, again, it can be kind of confusing because you might say they look identical, but one of them is Orthodox and in schism and one of them is Catholic and not. So, again, Catholic and Catholic can concelebrate with each other, but, like, I would not be able to go and concelebrate with the priest on Route 5. I've met him, and I call him Father and I'll kiss his hand and everything else. I mean, he's a priest. But I'd go to his liturgy and sit in the sanctuary and watch it and participate, but I can't concelebrate, I can't receive communion. And same with him coming to us. In fact, my first Mass as a priest, I have a good Orthodox priest friend up in Montgomery County, and I invited him to my first Mass. And he came to my first Mass and sat in the sanctuary, and we incensed him and everything else, but he didn't concelebrate, he didn't receive communion. So, again, it's kind of sad when you see that, but at the same time, we're not in communion, you know. Churches? 20. There are 23 autonomous churches in the Catholic Church, and the Latin Church, of which we are all members, is one of those 23. So there are 22 Eastern churches. Two of those have never been outside of communion with Rome. The other 20 at one point have been, and so those 20 are now back in communion with Rome, and the other ones aren't. So, yeah.
What are the two? Are they in conflict? Is that one?
No. The she asked which two were never outside of communion with Rome. The Italo-Albanian Greek Catholic Church. Basically, they developed in southern Italy because of all the trade vessels and stuff that came over from Greece to southern Italy. And so southern Italy had a whole bunch of Eastern churches, and they were in the Byzantine tradition. But they were Albanian, Italian, a weird mix, and so they were Eastern. They were not Roman at all. They were Eastern Rite, but they never fell out of communion with Rome. And in their case, part of it was a geographic thing. I mean, they were so close to it. They were in Italy. The other one are the Maronites, the Maronite Church, which is in present day, I want to say Lebanon, I think. They never fell out. The Maronites were the other ones that never fell out of communion with Rome. But like the Coptics, the Copts, as we call them, C-O-P-T-S, the Copts. Yeah, out of Egypt, yeah. So you have the Coptic Catholics, you have the Coptic Orthodox. And in addition to the Coptics, you have the Ethiopian as well. You have the Ethiopian Catholic, and they're both out of the Alexandrian Rite in Egypt. Yeah.
So up in Pittsburgh, there's a million Catholic churches.
Right.
So when I got home and I bust open the phone book, will I be able to just tell by the title?
You should.
You know, will they all say Catholic? If it just says like Russian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox.
If you see the word Orthodox, then that means they're not Catholic.
All right.
Now, I don't know how intelligent the people are who are writing the phone books. So, well, no, and I say that because...
Did you hear a billion Catholics up there? Okay.
Well, no, the reason I say that is they may not know, because, I mean, let's be honest, most people in society today, if you say Catholic, they think Roman Catholic. And so if you're there typing up a phone book, you're going to say, that's not a Catholic church, you know. It looks like an Orthodox church. So a lot of times, just in common parlance, they might be under the group of Eastern. Like, I've seen that before in phone books, where you look under churches, it'll say Eastern. And then you'll find, like, Catholic and Orthodox that are Eastern. And then you'll have a separate category that says Catholic, but that's not really right. I mean, the Eastern Catholics are Catholic. But even in the West, we have many different rites. I mean, we have the Roman Rite, but there are also developed variations of the Roman Rite, some of which have died out, some of which are still around. But, like, for instance, the Arabic influence on Spain, there developed the Mozarabic Rite in Spain, which looks like an Eastern Rite, but also has a lot of Roman influences in it. It's part of the Latin Church. So, like, I got to concelebrate the Mozarabic Rite this summer when I was in Spain for World Youth Day, and that was really cool because it looked like an Eastern Rite church, but it's part of the Latin church. And you also had, like, the Gaelic Rite that developed in Ireland, and you had the Gallican Rite in France, and you had all sorts of... a lot of the religious orders had rites. I mean, the Dominicans had a rite, the Franciscans had a rite. So, yeah, it can be kind of... the Jesuits have their own church and schism, yeah. No, so you should be able to tell. But one other quick thing, too, that I should have mentioned earlier, like I said, they have their own hierarchies. And so, for instance, because you mentioned Pittsburgh, there is, of course, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Pittsburgh. But also in Pittsburgh is the Ukrainian Catholic Archeparchy of Pittsburgh. Because they don't call their dioceses dioceses, they call their dioceses eparchies. Or if it's an archdiocese, it's an archeparchy. And their bishop is not the bishop, it's the eparch. It's just a different phraseology. But like, so their boundaries are different. So, like, for instance, if you're a Ukrainian Catholic and you live in this country, there are four different Ukrainian Catholic dioceses that cover the whole country. One of them is an archdiocese, an archeparchy out of Pittsburgh. And then there's another one out of Philadelphia. And so sometimes you'll see, like, they have their own cathedrals, they have their own bishops, their own priests. So, like, for instance, if you are Ruthenian Catholic and you live right here in La Plata, Maryland, you are technically not a subject of Cardinal Wuerl, like all of us are subjects of Cardinal Wuerl because we're Roman Catholic, but if you are a Ruthenian Catholic and you live right here, you're not in the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of Washington, you are in the Ruthenian Catholic Eparchy of Passaic, because even though Passaic is in New Jersey, that eparchy reaches basically the whole eastern coast. So they have their own boundaries, their own lines, everything else. And the ones that are bigger have more, and the ones that are fewer have less. Some of the Eastern rites are so small in this country that there's a single eparchy covering the whole country. So, for instance, if you're, like we said, the Coptics, for instance, I think it's Coptic, they have a single eparchy covering the whole country because there are just so few of them. Now, in theory, if they started growing in numbers, then they might split it in half and have two dioceses and eventually four. And, I mean, that's how it started with the Roman rite here. I mean, in the very beginning, there was one diocese that covered all the Roman Catholics in this country, and it was the Diocese of Baltimore. It wasn't even an archdiocese. It was called the Diocese of Baltimore, and its territory, it was the whole country. And as more and more Catholics came in, they started splitting it up, and they started carving out other dioceses and carving out more dioceses. And now you have something like 200 Roman dioceses that cover the United States. That's because there's so many of us. And in theory, that could happen with the Eastern rites too. If huge pockets started growing out, they would begin to redraw lines and establish new dioceses. So, but again, they have their own bishops, their own hierarchy. And again, eventually they fall under the Pope, as we do as well. But
what's the latest with the Episcopalian Church? You had mentioned that they were having their own hierarchy.
Yeah, that's a good question. The Anglicans coming over. It's funny because what the Pope did is the Pope basically did kind of, he kind of made them like an Eastern rite in the sense that they will now have their own diocese, but again, they don't use the word diocese, they're calling them ordinariates. And so there will be different ordinariates covering certain territories. So in January, it is still January, earlier this month, on January 1st, the Holy Father created the Ordinariate of the Chair of St. Peter, which covers this entire country. So if you are an Anglican and you become Catholic, you will now belong to the Ordinariate of the Chair of St. Peter, if you live in the United States. If you live in England, there's another Ordinariate there. And they're establishing, and again, as these grow, in theory, they could split it up and they could say, okay, well, now there are too many for a single ordinariate. We need one for the East Coast and one for the West Coast or whatever. But it's the same thing. Their ordinariates have an ordinary who, the current ordinary is not a bishop, and that's kind of one of the little caveats, is because he's married, he can't be a bishop, but he's still the ordinary. He still has the full powers of a bishop. He's just not a bishop. So that's been established, and they already have a cathedral in Texas. So the Anglican, I don't even know what they call it, but the Anglican Catholic Cathedral of basically the United States. I mean, the territory is the whole country now, and Canada, covers Canada as well. So that's been established. So there are many of them coming in now, and as the Episcopalian / Anglican Church goes more and more crazy, more and more of them are coming over. And in fact, there are something like, even like 100 priests who are looking, their priests who are looking to come over, and thousands of their laity who are looking to come in. But I'm glad you mentioned that, because it really, it's kind of a parallel. They're kind of like their own rite, because again, if you're one of those and you live in La Plata, Maryland, you are not a subject of Cardinal Worrell. You're a subject of this priest who's in Texas, and that's your diocese. That's your ordinary.
Going forward, will they have their own seminaries?
That was all in the provisions that the Pope put out. They could establish their own seminaries. And. And again, their liturgy is different too. And again, they're 100% Catholic. They're 100% Catholic. So you can go to their church and fulfill your Sunday obligation. And maybe I should have made that clear before when I was talking about fulfilling Sunday obligation. You can go to an Eastern Catholic church to fulfill your Sunday obligation. You just can't go to an Eastern Orthodox church to fulfill your Sunday obligation. But they're 100% Catholic, but they have their own liturgy. In fact, their liturgy is basically an older form of the Roman Rite, as it was in England when they split. And so it's much different. It's kind of like the Mass before Vatican II, but English. So it's really cool. They use a very high English, Queen's English. And it's just a much different liturgy. But it's Catholic. They're Catholic now, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about it.
And are they still using the Book of Common Prayer? If they said the Lord be with you, what would they respond?
Probably, and with thy spirit. I mean, that's...
Because they changed without us, and also with you.
Well, they changed before. They were using it before, but they're using an even older form of the Book of Common Prayer, adapted with a few things. I know one of the things is at the preface dialogue, let us give thanks to the Lord our God. We used to say it is right to give him thanks and praise. Now we say it is right and just. Theirs is something like, it is meet and just so to do. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this much snootier sounding English. It is neat and just so to do. It's a good parallel. They could have their own seminaries, their own everything.
Is there any unique feature that you might look at the outside of the church and tell what it is?
You're going to want to hit me for saying this, but they look kind of Eastern. the Eastern churches look kind of Eastern. I mean, especially the Russian ones. I mean, they have the cool little swirly domes and right. Well, that's the thing, is their churches look identical. I mean, you can't tell. You'd have to look at the signpost. Is this Ukrainian Catholic or Ukrainian Orthodox? You know, it's a completely different architecture. Especially once you go on the inside, you'll notice a lot of differences. But even from the outside, you can notice some differences. But there's no hard and fast rule. I mean, there are some Roman churches that are built to look kind of Eastern. Like, for instance, where I was ordained, the Basilica, the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, right in D.C., that's what people have coined American Byzantine. I mean, it's nothing like a Roman or Gothic kind of. I mean, it's very huge and Byzantine kind of looking. So sometimes you can tell from the outside.
Do the Orthodox acknowledge the crucifix, or are they simply with the cross? I gather that the Orthodox Catholic still would stay with the crucifix.
The Eastern Catholic. They still have crucifixes, yeah. Did you get that? She's asking about crucifixes. The crucifix is not just, let me say this. The cross is not just a Protestant thing. Sometimes people flip out when they see a Catholic church with a cross, and they say, well, it's supposed to be a crucifix. Well, yes, every Catholic church is supposed to have a crucifix. But it's not like a cross without a corpus on it is somehow Protestant. I mean, it was ours before it was theirs, you know. It's still Christian, you know. So you'll still see just plain old crosses on things, on vestments, on the wall, on stands. They use crucifixes as well. In fact, a big thing you'll notice on a lot of their crucifixes is they have a third bar. So you'll see, wondering how I can draw this, they'll have the regular cross, but then they'll have a top bar, which is supposed to be representative of where they put the sign up, you know, Jesus the Nazarene, King of the Jews. And they'll have a bottom bar, but it will be crooked. And that's, so you'll have the main cross, but then another bar here and another bar here. And it's supposed to be a symbol of Christ's suffering, that he was kind of like, he had to kind of push up to breathe. And so you'll see even the crosses that their bishops and priests wear will have the three bars, and the bottom one will be kind of crooked. So that's a specifically Eastern crucifix. You'll see, I think I actually saw one at the Mount Carmel bookstore where they had it that way. They had a little, and their vestments are different too. That's where it gets really confusing when you start seeing their vestments. They look much different then.
In the town where I grew up, Catholic Church, Presbyterian, and Methodist were on three corners.
Yeah. Well, that's because the Protestants all came out of the Roman Rite. You know what I mean? They were all Roman Rite, and then they broke off. So, same thing with the Eastern Catholic and the Eastern Orthodox. I mean, they were all one at one point, and then they broke, and some of them came back, but they've maintained those heritages. So. Any other?